Wowie, wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, you're
welcome
a scrumper.
Welcome to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie, wow!
Welcome to another ripper episode of the Wild Edible World podcast. I'm only one of your hosts. My name is Michael.
And I'm Steve. We are here with forager and survivalist extraordinaire, Coulter Barnes.
You might recognize him from his time on Alone. I remember him. He's one of my favorite people I've watched on that show. Very successful at like making a boat and like fishing, and I was just so impressed with everything I saw in there. And he's kind of a general, he's one of the people really walking the walk out there, kind of living out in the boonies all the time. So thanks so much for making the time to join us all the way out in Alaska.
Thanks for having me, Michael, Steve. I appreciate it, guys. Excited to be here.
So it's like 24 hours of sunlight out yonder, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I love all the myths about Alaska. They're great, but right now we do have about 20 hours, so it's sun setting about 11:30 right now, and it's light by 3:30, and your body just kind of resonates with that clock, man. You just go. You go really hard in the summers, and in the winters you hibernate a bit more.
Yeah, that's what you said, that like summertime is the time to get after it.
Oh, man, there's so much. I mean, the salmon run, everything here is so seasonally and so intense. Seasonally, like when a salmon comes, literally, I live on this largest salmon run on planet Earth, like 57 million fish last year, but they're only here for a couple months, boom, and then they're gone. And then, you know, wood season, ice season, any foraging, salmon berries are in right now, whatever it is, it comes really fast and it goes really fast.
Wow, ain't that just the northern climate with the boreal way? It's just like, yeah, intensely, yeah. Like you said.
Get it while you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what's sure.
No, what's something you foraged? Have you been out foraging today?
I was out foraging yesterday, so I went out and picked a bunch of king bleats. So I have probably, 20 pounds of king bleats right now in my kitchen, just kind of in the midst of processing and eating and cleaning, and yeah.
What's your favorite way to have them?
Man, I mean, I like to get my soup on, man, like in the fall. I mean, typically I'm picking a lot, you know, like, in the fall, so I like that kind of cold, boil it up with a stew, put in some, like, moose meat, potatoes, carrots, stuff from the garden, I love sautéed mushrooms on burgers and just anything, man, gravies, like, I love it, stroganoffs, but I'd say my favorite's in a stew. I like a good survival stew.
Yeah, we could definitely hang out, man. That sounds delicious.
Thanks for the invite.
Welcome, man, anytime.
Yeah, right? Isn't that kind of the point, that it's hard to find, though?
It is. But it's funny. I love people, and I definitely don't live out here to be away from people. I meet a lot of, and hermits, everybody has their own reasons, but people are like, I can't stand society, and I can't stand people. They drive me crazy. I'm like, that's not why I'm out here at all. I love the lifestyle, and I love the environment. I love the culture, but yeah, I'm not here to hide from people, for sure.
Are you lurking out in Alaska all year long?
Yeah, so I've lived in Alaska for 16 years, and within that 16 years, I took 1 year out of the state. I kind of went on a civilization bender for about 10 months down the lower 48, but other than that, I've been in the bush the entire time, year round.
Wow, that's super, super impressive. So you've been doing this for really, really long time. So is foraging in your family?
No, you know, it's funny. No one's ever had hunted a lot. We hunted ducks and pheasants and deer and elk and everything, and we fished all the time, but we never foraged. So I would say before I was 18, I hadn't even picked a berry, I hadn't picked a plant, not once. So it's been all in the last 11 years.
Wow, that's super impressive.
Oh, wait, sorry, 21 years.
Yeah. You don't have to age yourself.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah.
So you're originally from Montana, right?
Yeah, I was born in Shelby, Montana. I was raised out in Oregon. We moved to Oregon when I was young, and then I went back to Montana for college, and then I moved here at 22 to the village I'm living in right now, Saucanuck. So, yeah. I moved here at 22 and just was hooked. It's hard to leave Alaska.
Wow. One of the things we usually like asking people is their first memory ever eating a foraged or a plant, berry, whatever they found out in the woods. So yours must come a little bit late in your life. Do you mind telling us a little bit about it?
Yeah. I would say it was probably in college. So I got hooked up with a roommate who was an Eagle Scout. He was like, you know, he went out to the boundary waters, ended up becoming a guide out there. And so me and him would hunt. We'd elk hunt, grouse hunt, bird hunt. We fished all over the state and duck hunt out on the Missouri and whatnot. But we ate, you know, we'd make tea, needle tea out of pine needle tea or spruce needle tea or fir needle tea. And we would... we were picking nettles, and I don't know, there was just, he got me into it. So that was my first introduction into going, holy cow, like, we don't have to pack everything. There's, like, really good, like, healthy, valuable, just, like, stuff sitting right out in the woods. Like, so I thought he had to pack everything when I was backpacking, camping, and he changed my mind on the look at it a little different.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that story. So a very typical answer we get when we ask this next question is like whatever's in season, but if you could try really hard to think of like, what do you think your favorite berry or plant of all time is, if you have one?
Or mushroom.
Oh,
or
mushroom. Yeah. Okay. So my favorite thing to forage, I love mushroom hunting. I think that they're a really cool species. I think that their whole life cycle and reproduction, the mycelium networks with trees and communication, and I think it's phenomenal. But it's like a big Easter egg hunt out in the woods. And I lived in Southeast Alaska for 8 years in the temperate rainforest there, and they were everywhere. And there was such diversity and just funkiness, man. And when they went off, and you could really add to your pantry. So my favorite would probably be I don't want to say chanterelle, that's so like white collar, but I would say like a hedgehog, chanterelle, chicken of the woods. So mushrooms are probably my favorite, but in a close second out here are what they call are crowberries. They call them blackberries here. They're not blackberry. They're a lowbush crowberry, and they're all over the tundra here, and they're a real blue collar berry. Like a lot of people don't like them because they're seedy. And they're kind of bland. They're not really sweet, but, God, they're so good. And you pick them by the gallon. Like, you can fill them. I've seen whole chest freezers full of them. And so they're not just like a little berry to make a pie or make like a little, dessert out of. Like, people just eat and put them on their plate next to their salmon as a side dish. And it's great. So crowberries in a close second.
Wow, yeah, that's awesome. We never heard of a crowberry.
I'm going to have to look those up for sure.
Definitely. But, yeah, that's a way to call us out on the chanterelles, because Steve and I talk a lot about on the podcast about how chanterelles are probably our favorite mushroom. So no shame, brother, if you like chanterelles that much.
I know. And the same thing with morels. Like, I just, you know, and, yeah, it's great. Everybody eats their own, and everyone gets there at a different experience. But it's like morels and chanterelles are just so popular, but there's just like thousands of other varieties, and I'm just trying to learn, add one every year or add one every fall that I can pick. So
yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good ethos to kind of practice by is, yeah, add one plant. That's kind of what we say starting out for foragers too. Yeah, just like one plant at a time, man. It's not a rush.
Yeah, absolutely. And I only know literally about 15, you know, I know less than 20 mushrooms like that I know I can eat and edible. But I try to figure out which ones are the most bulk in my area when I move to a new region or something, and in my area. And then, so when I go out there and walk around. Like, there's so many I don't know. I love doing spore prints, and I love trying to identify them and following the little key and stuff. But yeah, I really don't know that many. But thankfully, it's the most common ones that are around me. So.
Yeah. So just, I guess just touching back on the alone thing a little bit, just because it's burning a hole in my mind. Your season of alone was an MF-er, dude. With the regulations and the just all around, like, I'd say scarcity, man. Like,
oh yeah,
it was tough.
It was. So two things. I mean, first and foremost, like, I was 100% responsible for my starvation, my failures, my inability to live off the land. Like, I don't want to blame it on a location because people lived there for thousands of years. And so I needed to learn faster, and I didn't do it. But, yeah, if you look back at the years, like, literally, I'm a math guy, and mm-hmm. if you just calculated the calories, the average calories per contestant of any season, like, I can pretty much guarantee that our season was the lowest. Like, it was hard times, man. I mean, it was not much food to be found. I mean, people weren't catching things. You look at a lot of the footage, like, it wasn't them eating fish and pulling fish out of their gill nets and getting rabbits out of their snare. It was like they had to make it up with other things, you know?
Yeah, it was definitely one of the seasons that I would call, like, the last man, like, the longest starver, like,
yeah,
the one that
totally
wins. Yeah, it was totally brutal. There's something, like, you're not wrong. People have lived there for, centuries, millennia, but, they also had an entire, like, livelihood built up, like, to continue to support themselves, not just dropped down in the middle of the landscape with, like, you know, absolutely nothing prepared or preserved or anything like that.
And items.
Yeah.
Totally. And they were doing it socially as a culture. I mean, you do it with a band of people, and
yeah,
you're nomadic.
Sure.
You can move. Like, you know, the cool thing about a nomadic, where I live now, this village was nomadic until 1950, man. And so just recently. But you went to an area when it was the best. They went to beaver camp when that was the best time to be there. They went to fish camp when it's the best time to be there. They went to squirrel camp when it's the best time to be there. So it's pretty cool when you're not hindered by your little 2-mile by 2-mile square.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to be very nomadic in a little box like that. So.
Yeah. But yeah, so just big respect to the trials that you had to overcome out
there.
Yeah,
you had a landslide too, didn't you?
Yeah, I had that landslide.
That's crazy.
Man, and I should have lived it. I mean, that's my biggest regret of the whole experience. I mean, it was an incredible experience, right? But I want to go out and do better. Like, I want to go out to that same piece of land. I want them to drop me there and see if I can last longer than 67 days. But I tell you what, like, I would set up shop in that landslide. Like, my shelter would be there. I would live there. And I knew that. It's like, intuitively, I knew that. I was there on day two. Like, I hiked there on day two, picked a gallon of berries, and was like, yep, this is where I need to be. Then I got distracted with my boat and the shelter and other things. And the next time I went back there, it was like day 40. So.
Oh, and you were probably pretty wiped by then, I would assume, or at least starting.
I was totally white, man. It was hard to get there. Didn't have the energy to hike because it's vertical. I mean, I was still an so I had to really go up. And so I don't know. I mean, when I was living on the island, like, before I moved out there, I was living alone on this island for 4 years. And there was a landslide that went into the water, and I would shrimp there. That's where I put my shrimp pots.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Landslides are just very, you know, they're dynamic places where there's a lot of life and a lot of nutrient exchange. And
sure.
I messed up on that one, man. That's one that got away from me.
Yeah, it's like natural tilling of the soil almost, right?
Yeah, nutrient recycling, like, things are brought up, and it was all deciduous trees and shrubs in there where everything else was conifer and just, like, hardly any underbrush. Like, in there, willows and cottonwoods and aspens and all these baby stuff, and so, like, rabbits and tons of berries and grouse. Like, I'm guessing they were there. Now, I didn't see them there, but if I was one of those critters, that's probably where I'd have been in my square.
Is there a certain ingredient from your time there that you ate a lot of that you think back on fondly?
I mean, I can't say enough about them, man. I mean, mushrooms got me. There was a 21 day spell where I didn't eat any protein, like no fish, no animal protein, so no fish, no, you know, nothing like that, no red meat, because I found a washed up bird. But no, 21 days, I probably picked 75 pounds of mushrooms. So Mashiitakes, the pine mushroom. I picked boletes, and I picked these red ones. I called red slime balls. I have no idea what they were, but I ate a bunch of them. but then there was a purple one that I picked like 10 pounds of this purple one, and I would just, I put it in my gums for an hour and spit it out. I would eat half one just for the whole day and see how I felt. Like, it made me sick every time, so I threw away about 10 pounds of those, those, and then rose hips and onions. Like, those three things were, you know, 90% of my plant diet were rose hips, wild onions, and mushrooms.
And you still enjoy all three of those?
I love that, man. I want to be part of my life. The thing is, like, and everybody gets to experience the wild in their own way. Some people do it on the evenings after work or on the weekends. They go camping or on holidays. Whatever, like, for me, it's a lifestyle that I love to do, and so, like, every single day, like, this year, I've put up 304 salmon so far, just harvested mushrooms yesterday, like, I love to do it, you know, as a normal part of my life, the 90% of my life, and so, yeah, my turds looked like a rose hip seed, man, they had, like, 20,000 rose hip seeds in it. Like, they were hard, I should have built something out of them, man, like a cabin or something.
Oh,
I don't
my
know.
God. I think you can officially call that scat, Coulter scat, at that point.
I wasn't seeing any seeds. You know, people sit these down and do this. I mean, I was just eating, you know, you just eat the whole thing, but I probably ate 3,000 rose hips, and they have, like, 20 seeds each. It was crazy.
They definitely
it was crazy.
Oh, wow. And then, yeah, everybody says that they, like, itch coming out. You felt fine?
I felt great, yeah. I mean, I felt great. But I was having a bowel movement only about 5 to 7 days, so
that makes sense.
I don't know. Yeah, I really don't know.
Right on.
Sigh.
What's wrong, buddy?
Well, I just realized this mushroom supplement I bought isn't actually made with mushrooms. It's made with something called myceliated grain?
Myceliated grain?
Oh no!
I'm sorry to tell you, buddy, but myceliated grain is a sure sign of a poor quality mushroom supplement.
Well, dang. I wanted mushrooms, not brown rice. What should I do?
Well, you should support a small batch producer from right here in the Midwest, Keweenaw Apothecary.
Keweenaw Apothecary? Tell me more.
Keweenaw Apothecary specializes in high-quality mushroom extracts from Michigan, and they always use real mushrooms, never, never, never myceliated grain.
That sounds like exactly what I've been looking for. Where can I order?
Well, you can find them at keweenawapothecary.etsy.com. That's K-E-W-E-E-N-A-W apothecary.etsy.com. Be sure to read their many excellent reviews.
Thanks, buddy. I don't want no low-quality mushroom products from a factory. I want Keweenaw Apothecary.
Wowie wow!
Wowie wow! We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, you're
welcome
a
welcome to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com.
Wowie wow!
So you were known during your season for your boat, but I think that you should have been known for eating that wormy-ass woodpecker.
Yeah, I get a lot of disgust, man. There's a couple of things that, like, it's funny, like, people, you know, I've had about, like, 8,000 or whatever, 10,000 messages from people that watch the show, like, and 99% of them are so positive, like so kind, so encouraging, so people that aren't positive, and there's two things, that wormy woodpecker, and then just how absolutely filthy I was. That, like, you were so dirty, I had to turn the channel when you came on.
Oh, dude, I love how dirty you were, though, honestly. Like, ain't no mirrors out there, nobody to impress, yeah. And you just have shoot on your face. It's not like... sitting dirt, like, I don't know, give you character. I remember. And then you put your glasses, honestly, that's the funny part, was, like, your glasses always kept, like, your eyes really clean.
Yeah, man, I like that. So, and I'm pretty dirty just in my regular life, so it wasn't a big deal. But, yeah, that woodpecker, man, was...
hilarious.
Okay. It was a little bit, like, I like to know how things die. I don't mind eating roadkill, but, like, I know it was hit or when it was hit, and that thing, like, flooding in the lake, it was just weird, and then those worms were just huge, man. I mean, they were the size of my fist. They came out of that cavity of that bird, but it tasted great, man. It was delicious. So good. I do it all over again. I dream of that bird.
No! Hell yeah, dude.
If somebody... said you have a 1 in 10 chance at winning this show from eating a mealy woodpecker. I'd eat the woodpecker personally.
Oh, yeah. I know, what a great chance! Like one, like just the experience. Yeah, I'm sure you guys grew up and like so many people grew up and just say, I want to go live out in the woods, man, or I want to go try it or test myself. Or I heard of this mountain man or this hermit or this like crazy survival story. Like, and so you want to do it, but. Then you go in $500,000. Like, when I heard about the show, it already had 6 seasons on. And my mom told me about it. And I was like, you can win $500,000 just going camping? Like, that's crazy.
So I think there's, like, a few, like, main skills that, at least just from watching the show, are important, right? So you need to know some flora. You need to know some fauna. So you need to know fishing, hunting, foraging, and you need to be okay being by yourself for a little while, right? So how would you rank those four things as far as importance for being a contestant on Alone?
Ooh, I'm going to say, the most important thing about being on that show is how uncomfortable you can be. Like, are you okay with being uncomfortable? Wet, cold, lonely, failing, whatever, discomfort. Like, to me, that's number one, is how uncomfortable you can be. Like, then the second thing is, if you look at people, like, who've won the show from season 6 through 9, 6, 7, 8, it was big game hunters, right?
Yeah,
like, and so I'm not saying, like, if we're looking at it strategically, man, I'm not saying that that's the whole thing. People go on there, again, for different, they go on there and they have moving, like, spiritual, wonderful, beautiful experiences. I'm all for that. But the people, it's not primitive skills folks that win it. And so I think primitive skills are so cool. I think flint knapping and tanning, and I'm going to learn those skills the rest of my life, but that's not what typically wins that show. It's who can camp. Like, can you just make a camp? Can you make a shelter that keeps you dry? Your shelter doesn't win it for you. You know, your water pot doesn't win it for you. How big your knife doesn't win it for you. Like, can you be uncomfortable, and can you kill a big animal? Like, that's in the last few years.
Season 9
was a little different. Like, you know, some calorie efficiency and hibernation. Like, I like that philosophy, man. I don't want it to just be big game hunters, but 6, 7, and 8, there were 3 years in a row where that took them to the end, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
So
I don't recall your shelter. What sort of a shelter did you have on the show?
Man, I love my shelter. Like, I don't understand why I didn't get more airtime. Like, I love that thing. I thought it was, like, well thought out. Like, number one, I wanted to go underground. Like, if you look at indigenous cultures at that latitude, you go from Canada through Alaska through Russia, they go underground in the winter and above ground in the summer. It's smart. And so the ground temperature is warmer than above air. So I couldn't go where I was, like, digging. Was calorie inefficient. I didn't have, like, Teresa's spot was awesome. She had a lot of sand there. Could dig into it. Mine, a lot of rocks, tough digging. So I wanted to keep it low, and I wanted to keep it small so it was efficient for heating. I connected to a boulder that was the size of a couch, and so I got some thermal mass from that. I got a windbreak from that. I had another side of my wall I didn't have to put up, and then I got a fireproof chimney and a flue. There was a crack in it. And I put my fire right there. And so I could rage my fire, like, I didn't, because I wanted to be efficient with wood, but the months about burning down my shelter because my chimney was a giant boulder. The other thing that I liked about my shelter was, you know, where in your house, you guys, your walls, your floor, your ceiling, where does heat evacuate the fastest?
Ceiling. Roof.
Yeah.
Sure.
Your ceiling, that's where you put the most insulation. Heat rises, it goes up. And so I did a flat roof with like 3 feet of insulation. I could walk on my roof.
What?
And it was flat. And so I thought, I thought that was, because we build a lot, I see a lot of teepees, I see a lot of A-frames. Well, an A-frame and teepee, you can't put much insulation on the peak of your roof. And so I don't think they're super efficient. They're for different reasons. People want space, head space, or stuff like that. But mine definitely wasn't a yoga studio. It was just a little kind of coffin that I slept in every night.
Yeah, one guy built a yurt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm standing in a yurt right now, man. Oh, that's nice. What I live in.
Very cool.
I think all that stuff's fun. Like, that's the other thing is, like, I feel like I kill the fun by making the utility out of things. Like, I want to just, like, be, I didn't make a chair because I didn't give a shit. The chair doesn't get me to the end. I didn't make, like, cool carvings and furniture and, like, cute. Like, I think that stuff's awesome. People that do it, like, are talented, and I have tons of respect for them. But I don't think that stuff, wins you the game. So, anyhow, I'm not against it by any means, but I was just, like, total utilitarian, like, food, sleep until they were going to pull me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of, you know, it's a double-sided sword that they didn't feature as much of your shelter as you'd like, because good, efficient, and effective shelters aren't good television.
Yeah.
The good television are the ones that don't insulate properly and are freezing at night, or the ones that go up in flames. You know, you see them build their structures start to finish. So it's kind of, you know, one of those weird, like, the silver lining that we didn't see as much of your shelter as much as we should. I don't think we even saw you, like, walk on it that much. Because it sounds really impressive.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. And, that is a good point. And, you know, like, I hunted and I trapped. I didn't get anything. But I had snares out, and I hunted, and everyone, and no one saw that. That's okay. Like, I feel, like, grateful for the show. I thought they made me look better than I really am. And I thought that they did a good job. And they get 45 minutes to tell your story. And for me, yeah, mine was my boat. But it's funny because I get recognized. Like, when I go through the airport, there's something you get recognized. When you wear those glasses, I don't know what it is. And they all, this guy come up to me, bought me a beer, and I was in Dallas. And he's like, hey, son. And he's the older guy. He's like, I just wanted to give you a piece of it. If you ever get back on my show, he's like, you should really try hunting.
Oh, no. Never thought of that,
like,
did you?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was like, that's a great idea. Thank you. And, like, it's like, you know, it was really cool that he reached out. And, like, I love it. But it's like, I hunted my ass off. Like, I really hunted, but...
That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, that's that parasocial, like, yeah, well, they didn't show it, so you didn't do it, obviously. Like, oh, yeah, but I mean, how nice of him to, again, just, like, recognize you at all and say, hey, I'm buying you a beer, like, regardless of the somewhat insulting notion that you didn't know to hunt.
Yeah, no, when you look like this, man, people don't reach out and buy you beers that often, so I was super grateful. I didn't talk to that guy. I should have talked more hunting strategy with that guy, but yeah, like, people have been so wonderful, so kind and encouraging. Like, it's just a real feel-good thing for me. Is like, I went on the show for the social aspect.
Yeah.
I was living alone on an island. 2020, it was the pandemic, we canceled all of our college courses, and so I wasn't going to see anyone, and so since then, man, it's just been meeting, I've met so many people, had opportunities that become of it, and it's been a really cool, really neat experience.
So, that now that the, not necessarily post-pandemic, but are you guys' classes back in action now, or are you just kind of full-time living in the wild?
So they are, so I was at the Institute for 4 years. 2018, 19, 20, and 21, and then since I've moved back to my homestead in Southwest Alaska in Kokanok, and I'm working on a project to start a 5-acre farm in every village in Alaska. It's called Alaska Bush Community Farms, ABC Farms. And my goal is to grow 50,000 pounds of food in these villages in the middle of nowhere. So cool things, but they don't really fit. Out here, we can grow right in the dirt and grow food for the people of the
village. I love it, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's so inspiring. Do you have a website or anything, or are you waiting to release more information on that?
I'm kind of waiting, yeah. I kind of want to do a big launch, and I want to have all my ducks in a row, and I've got one village so far, and hoping to have two on board, that I want to be kind of a pilot for it, and so, I want to do a big launch and have everything ready to put out there, but it's been real supportive so far, talking to the communities, they're behind it. It's always a personnel thing. These are small communities, 75 people, 150 people. They're really small. And so, you know, people can get stretched pretty thin. The people that do things, they do everything. You know, just kind of right now, it's in a personnel stance on not so much funding, but we got to find people to do the work. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. We'll keep an eye out for any future updates regarding that. That's really awesome. Do you have a garden at your own place?
I do. Yep. So I love to. I love my spirit vegetable. Can you guess it? I'm gonna let you guys guess. What's my spirit vegetable?
Your spirit vegetable?
Yeah. Oh man, this is an obvious one here now.
Is it?
Is it onions?
That's a good guess. It's a potato.
Oh, hell yeah.
That is so good.
I love potatoes, man. I could talk potatoes and composting my own feces all day. I love that stuff. So, I have a composting toilet out here, and I've had, 15 years of my own human manure, and I try to grow hundreds of pounds of potatoes because, we get salmon and moose and caribou, and we get a ton of berries. So those things match really well with potatoes and kale. And so that's what I grow mostly. I don't try and garden everything you see in a produce aisle because it doesn't really make sense out here,
Yeah, you're like the Martian out here. Have you read that book? The Martian?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the movie?
Yep.
Yeah, growing potatoes in your own feces and kicking
ass. That's the shit, man. When I saw that, I gave a standing ovation in the theater when I saw that part. I love that.
Okay, so you're liking growing potatoes. Is there anything particularly, a plant that you're particularly proud of that you didn't think you could grow, or something that's just doing really exceptionally well?
No, I mean, I like, again, the utility of it. I love things that grow well. We have cold, wet, acidic soil here.
Mm-hmm.
So potatoes do well, berries do well, greens do well, but there's things that don't do well. Kind of ho hum, asparagus is terrible. We're not tomato and pepper country. People want to throw that's awesome. But what makes sense to me is the easiest stuff that grows well and the most efficient. You can't grow more calories in a square foot in Alaska than you can a potato. It's not corn country. It's not wheat country. It's not rice in those different grains, but it's potato country. And so, yeah, man. I mean, I've had fun, but then I still try to smell the flowers and look at the view and appreciate art. I need to do better at this stuff. And so, yeah, I grow some weird. I mean, I'll grow some. I have apple trees going out here, and I have. I grow a lot of bok choy or cabbage that I like making kimchi. See what else? I'm growing pumpkins in the greenhouse. It'd be fun for some kids. I mean, a lot of these. No one grows pumpkins out in the village or in rural Alaska, so it's just kind of a weird thing to do.
Yeah, and it's not that weird. But we're Illinoisans here. We're the world center of pumpkin growing.
All right.
Yeah, that's cool though. Yeah, so that tracks with your you pretty much grow what grows well. You're not really doing any experimenting or what's the point?
Yeah, and I love artists. There's artists in every field, man. And people that just go out and do really cool, techie, interesting stuff in every field, in gardening and survival and all that stuff. It's not me. I'm kind of I'm a C minus in everything I do, and I'm super proud of it. So, and I do a ton of shit. I try to do everything from, foraging or milling wood or forging on a blacksmith forge or building a place or gardening or sailing or blah, blah, blah. Whatever it is, I try to do scuba diving. I try to do a lot, but I'm not. Yeah, I'm definitely not an artist in any of them.
Well, yeah, it takes all kinds of people. And, yeah, we need artists just as much as we need the people that can, fill in the gaps everywhere, too.
Yeah, just as much as we need potatoes.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, things that have been fun to forage. calendar in my house, starting with, say, January in one side and then going all the way around back to January. January, and, like, you know, fiddlehead ferns come out early, devil's club buds come out early, fireweed shoots, whatever, you know, just like this painting. Like, I want to have this kind of cool art mural where people come to my house, because I've been a wolf farm host. I've hosted 51 woofers. In the last 12 years,
but
people show up. They show up in May and they say, hey, like, what can I pick? What's in season? They can kind of look and get a visual in the place, which I think would be kind of fun. So,
yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think you should take that artwork, make some prints, maybe make it into a calendar and sell the shit out of those. Use those for your Alaska project. I love it.
Yeah, we'll help fund that for sure. We'll buy that.
Put them on a t-shirt.
All right. You know, it's hard, man. It's hard not to... Because someone told me, my parents made these shirts that said, I showed up at the airport one time and it said, hey, bear, on the back. I thought it was great, man, but it's like, we don't need more shirts in the world. Like, it's not something I think, like, you know what I mean? I don't want to sell garb, but I understand, like,
Totally, absolutely.
Yeah, I
totally understand.
But it
would be
fun.
Would be good merch, though.
I know. Maybe, yeah. It would be fun. I mean, it's always that line, man, between, I don't know, trying to live your values or what, you know, live simply, but also, like, just have fun with it. Like, I could just make 100 of them and sell them, and I know they sell, and it'd be kind of fun to see them around, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. It's kind of, it's really fun. I mean, even with those stickers and for the podcast, something really simple. Yeah. People don't need more freaking stickers, but... People take them and they put them places, and we don't hardly even sell any of them. We give 90% of them away, but it's so fun and cool to see them out there.
How about a biodegradable calendar that's made out of that seed paper?
Whoa.
Right? And you can plant it. Yeah. We're onto something.
I mean, I made elephant poop paper, like, in Thailand, but I wonder if we can make bear poop paper here in Alaska. There we go.
Oh my gosh, from all the, like, rose hips and stuff that they, Coulter poop paper.
Coulter poop paper.
Well, maybe I sold to two guys in Illinois, that's about it.
Well, hey, we'll be a fervent customer base for you. But all that being said, it's been a really awesome chat with you, Coulter. Good luck processing the rest of your mushrooms. Do you mind if people follow you on your socials and stuff?
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I love getting connected with folks and meeting new people and meeting you guys today. In a little village out here, you know everybody, so you don't get to meet strangers very often. So it's great to visit with you guys. I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, no, this has been really fun. So your social stuff is at Coulter_Barnes.
I think so, man. I really don't know, but I know it's Coulter Barnes. I know that's the name, but my Facebook, and it comes up. You'll see a guy in those glasses on Instagram or Facebook. That's what I got.
Yeah, Instagram looks like Coulter Wambach Barnes.
That's it. That's my middle name. Yeah.
Cool. And thanks. Big shouts out to sponsor of the show and major supporter, Brendan Fox, who is our mutual that kind of pulled all the strings to help this conversation happen. So big shouts out to him. Hopefully we see him soon. And maybe we can make our way out to Alaska someday. Maybe a little less likely than you making it stateside. But if you ever do, you got to reach out if you're in the Chicago area.
I'll absolutely reach out. You guys are welcome to come out here. Come for a week, come for a month, come for a season. But come check it out. It's worth it. It's a wild place. So thanks.
Wow. Be careful what you wish for.
Man, I've had people stay out here for a year and a half, 9 months. Like, you know, like those 51 woofers, like, it's the first woofer I ever got showed up in 2010 and he hasn't left. He's still been here 13 years later.
Whoa. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
That's admirable.
Bring it. He can't scare me.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Later, guys. Good talking with you.
It's been awesome. See ya.